My brothers and sisters, our Lord Jesus Christ already had the 12. These men that He especially chosen and called to Himself to form in a unique way to go out and evangelize all the world. Now, He had just called them a short time before, and all of a sudden we hear He invites 72 others and sends them out on a mission. Why the need for these other 72 when He already has these specially chosen 12? St. Augustine, writing in the 5th century, said this: "As no one doubts, the 12 apostles foreshadowed the order of bishops, so also we must know that the 72 represented the priesthood." What was our Lord Jesus Christ doing? He was establishing the church. He was founding the structure that she would have until the end of time, that there would be an order of priests to work in union with the bishops to spread the gospel all throughout the world. A century later, St. Gregory is writing upon this same passage, Gregory the Great, one of the only popes given that title, the Great. And he said something I've never heard before, and something that any priest has to really take to heart. He said this. He says, "It is with deep sorrow that we hear our Lord say, 'The laborers are few.'" Now, when our Lord says that, what do you immediately think of? Man, if only there were more priests, right? The harvest is so great. If we had more men who would give their lives. St. Gregory says this: "Behold, the world is full of priests, but seldom is there found a true laborer among them. We undertake the priestly office, but few of us perform the works we are called to." And I read that and I couldn't help but think of St. John Vianney. St. John Vianney, when the devil came to him and said, "If there were 3 of you in France, I would never be able to enter this country again." Right? If 2 other priests would live the way you do, I could not do anything to the souls in France until the end of time. Or I thought of St. Padre Pio. Actually, you know, one more thing with St. John Vianney. At the end of his life, it is estimated that he heard approximately 80,000 confessions a year. That would be about 225 a day. If every priest would pour themselves out in that way, imagine what we would accomplish. Or I think of someone like St. Padre Pio. Just recently, I came upon a story that I'd never heard before. And I'm always thankful because the school kids, they have to hear my stories like 4 or 5 times. And they're always like, they turn to their parents like, "Mom, Dad, I heard this one already." So it's a new one. So Padre Pio, the very first time he ever experienced the gift of bilocation. Bilocation is when someone is physically present in one place and they become spiritually present in another. The first time he ever experienced this, he was a seminarian. He was a teenager. And our Blessed Mother Mary brought him to another place in Italy. And he's in a home of a wealthy family, and there is a man who is dying. And while this man, the husband, the father of the family, is passing away, his wife is in the room next door giving birth to a new child. And our Blessed Mother Mary says to Padre Pio, "I am entrusting this little girl about to be born to you. I want you to make her beautiful for me." And Padre Pio says to Our Lady, I'm a seminarian. I'm not even a priest. What good can I do?" And she says, "Trust in me. This little girl will one day come to you. You will first meet her at St. Peter's." And Padre Pio has no idea what that means. It's the first time he ever experienced this. 17 years go by, and one day he experiences bilocation again, and he finds himself in St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. And he is near the confessionals, and there is a young 17-year-old girl there. And she's speaking to one of the attendants of the basilica, and she says, "Is there any priest to hear confessions?" And he says, "You know what, I'm sorry, you've come too late in the day, they've all gone home already." She looks over and she sees this Franciscan. And she thinks, "Oh my gosh, no, there's still somebody here." She runs over to him and she says, "Father, do you have time for a confession?" He says, "Of course, certainly." They enter the confessional. She was struggling at that time with her faith. So not only does she make her confession, but she asks him a few theological questions. He hears her confession, gives her absolution, explains, gives responses to that which she asks. She steps outside and she thinks, "You know what, I'm going to wait. I just want to thank him. He's just saved my faith." She's standing there a couple of minutes, and that same attendant walks up to her. And he says, "You know what, you can always come back tomorrow for confession. I'm sorry that you were too late today." And she said, "Oh, no, I just went to confession. The Franciscan priest was still here." And he walks over to the confessional, and it's empty. The girl walks over, and she's amazed. She does not understand what just happened. 1 year later, a good friend of hers invites her to San Giovanni Rotondo, where Padre Pio's monastery was. And she says, "You have to meet this priest. He's doing unbelievable things." So she accompanies her friend. They arrive, and there's a huge, large crowd. Padre Pio walks right up to her, and he says this, "I know you. When you were born, your dad died on the same day." And she looks at him. She doesn't understand how could he know that. But because of the crowd, somebody else gets his attention. They're distracted, so she can't even respond. But the next day, she goes to confession. And when she kneels down, Padre Pio says this, "My daughter, finally you have come. I have been waiting for you for so many years." And she says, "Father, I think you have the wrong person. We've never met before." And he says, "Yes, we have. I heard your confession a year ago in St. Peter's." And all of a sudden she knew that everything that was reported about Padre Pio was true. And then he told her that Our Lady brought him to the delivery room, her mother's room, on the day of her birth, and entrusted her to him. She begins to cry and she says, "Padre Pio, tell me what to do with my life. I'll do anything you say. Am I supposed to become a nun?" He says, "No, you're not. But come here to me frequently. I will form your soul so that you accomplish God's will in your life." There were hundreds of souls like that in the life of Padre Pio. A gift that he made of himself to the church, responding to our Lord's call. If only there were more laborers in the vineyard. A week ago, this past week, I've been in Chicago with a group of priests. And every year we meet in the summer for a week and we have a guest speaker come. And there was a priest who was in seminary formation. And he was giving us a talk on the priesthood. And he said to us, and I didn't know this gospel was coming. He said, he's an older priest, and he said, "My sons, do you know when you truly become laborers in God's vineyard?" He says, "You remember early in the Gospel of John when Jesus says, 'I can do nothing but what I see the Father doing.'" He says, "You remember at the end of that same gospel, before our Lord is going to give his life on the cross at the Last Supper, he says the same words to the apostles. He says, 'I am the vine, you are the branches. Without me, you can do nothing.'" He said, "Our Lord is the one true high priest. He can only do what he sees the Father doing." And what he's saying is, if you are going to live out your priesthood, you must relate to him as he relates to the Father. You will become the priest you are called to be when you discover fully that you can do nothing. And then you will allow our Lord in as he desires in your soul. And he will accomplish wonders in your life. My brothers and sisters, what is said of priests in a particular way is true of all the faithful. We are all called to labor in our Lord's vineyard. When will we accomplish all that God asks of us? It's when we realize completely in the depths of our hearts that without him, we can do nothing. You know, sometimes people come to me and they say, "Father, you know, what good can I do? I have all these weaknesses. I don't have a lot of money. You know, how can God use me?" And they think they're at a disadvantage. And I say, actually, with all your weaknesses, with your poor means, you're at a great advantage in comparison to others. Because it will be easier for you to know and understand that you must rely completely upon Him. I close with this. St. Maximilian Kolbe, a Franciscan priest, he wanted to live out the vow of poverty as completely as possible, as Franciscans are called to do. He used to say, poverty is our capital. We can do great things for God when we are really poor, because then we depend upon Him to accomplish everything. My brothers and sisters, poverty is our capital. And I don't mean financial poverty, though God might ask that of us. I mean to truly be spiritually poor. When we realize how broken, how faulty, how sinful we are, and we say, Lord, I can do nothing except that You do it in and through me. Let me use all my weaknesses for Your glory, because they will be the means by which I open myself totally to You.